Tonight, eh?
Dinner?
You're listening to the Doug Stanhope Podcast.
Welcome to a swap cast of Fitzdog Radio and the Doug Stanhope Podcast. Christine Hodge joins us to make it a triumvirate of
Road Dog.
We're film stars, so I don't even know why we're podcasting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Movie stars. If you star in a movie, you are a movie star, and that's why I did it.
I think that only applies to porn. I don't know. I think in film, you actually have to exceed your budget in sales, and then you're a star. Porn, you just have to shoot it.
I guess in this movie, only me and the kid that played my son would be stars, because we had the most lines.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I'm a movie star, and I'm glad to have you on my picture as second, however you would know. Like the people billing. That come after the first two credits.
Yeah.
You would be at the bottom of the cover if it was a DVD.
Yeah. I want to be the guy, you either get your name before the movie starts.
Above the title.
Or after the movie ends. I want to be before it starts.
And then we're hoping Doug will be above the title.
Yeah.
I believe the kid dog. Would be, even though he's a co-star, he's got the second most lines. I think he would be, and introducing.
Yes.
Desmond Mulrooney.
I remember, what was James Dean's first movie? Was it Rebel Without a Cause? Because I remember it was in Introducing James Dean, and I remember going like, that's sexy as fuck. That's what you want in a movie. If I'm 55, and this might be, I've been in a couple little movies before. I haven't done many movies.
You're too known to be an introducing.
I am. Sorry. I'm slightly too known. That's where.
What else have you been in, Mr. Fitz?
I did a movie called Monumental. It was an indie film back in New York that I was actually the lead in, and I don't know that it ever got seen anywhere.
Isn't a lead a star?
I was a star.
Yeah, we're both movie stars.
Ding, ding, ding.
And she starred in Head of the Class.
Yes. Loved you in Head of the Class.
Aw, thanks.
Yes.
Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah.
Super great, magical time for me.
That was a number of years, wasn't it?
And I were also People Magazine's 50 Most Beautiful Men in the World, it was the lost issue.
It was a lost issue. It was Joey Diaz was in it.
Joey D.
Yeah. They just showed his toenails because they felt like that was his strength.
Very sexy.
The way they curled. And that thick fungus.
Joey Diaz from back in the day.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Yes, that's when we were dating.
From our dating days.
Christine and I, we have to, should we just start with all the weird things about this movie, all the coincidences?
Yes.
So I get an offer to do a movie where Hennigan, my manager, says, oh, they want you to star in a movie. It films all of February in Chicago. And I went, fuck no. I just immediately, like, no, there's no way I'm going to be in Chicago in the winter. I've scheduled my career about avoiding traffic and bad seasons.
Yeah.
And then I read the script. And, like, there's so much in the script that, like, they said it, we had you in mind, but I thought, you're stealing my life. Parts of it where like, this is exactly me. So I go, I have to do this. There's a reason I'm doing this.
I was shocked that it was not written for you, which it was not.
No, it's Tony.
As far as we know.
Tony is the guy that was doing these one-nighters, and he's the drunk. I play an alcoholic chain-smoking comedian that's doing shitty one-nighters still in his 50s. And Tony, he's sober 15 years, and he was doing these shows. So it's his, like, what if I didn't quit drinking?
Yeah.
But it's mine, what if I didn't have money?
Yeah.
I would still be doing those fucking gigs for $380.
It's reminded me a little bit of the episode you did of Lucky Louie, where you're this comic who is just... There's no sense of like, I need to get, like most comics, no matter where you are, how long you've been doing, you always want to be at the next point, you know, whether it's playing bigger halls or, and your character and, well, I guess so, but I think,
but my reality is no,
but you're not in that category.
Yeah. One of the worst things about coming back to LA is seeing ambition in people that are my age now and they're still trying. I'm like, aren't you just happy? Like, I moved to a place where I live within my means and I'm happy. I don't want to work. So this is, because I keep saying it's the same character I played on Louis, but it's not. Like, that guy, like, this is who I am now.
Yeah.
So it is the same character if he was 55 instead of 41 and suicidal. Now I'm just old and resigned. So I'm still kind of playing myself, but a different
version. But you got over the suicide. You sort of, like, own the suicide and said, that was just an attention seeking.
Life's
going
to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Right, I don't need to kill myself. It's happening on its own.
Right. Suicide can be something that you can romanticize. And then you realize, like, oh, that's just like getting a Corvette or something. I don't need that.
Am I really going to do it when it comes down to it? I'll just kill myself. Yeah. But when you're faced with it, are you?
Yeah.
So I
what's the closest you ever got to, if anyone's listening and is on the edge? Just I think this is where a PSA from Christine. Yeah.
I think that's court ordered now.
Yes,
I think that has to be said when suicide is talked about. You say if you are thinking about suicide, contact us.
Here's a number.
These guys are just joking.
It's going to go to the Philippines. Here's the suicide hotline. Yeah. Hello, thank you for calling. My name is Madison.
Madison, I just want to tell you, I'm a stand-up comic. I'm making about $125,000 a year, and I can't book July right now. I'm thinking about ending my life.
I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you for calling. I'm going to put you on to my supervisor.
And how is your life, by the way? I'm still talking to the Filipino.
We're still doing the character thing? All right. Yes, and
I'm just thinking about how little empathy this woman would have for a comedian who's making $125,000.
Well, no,
a year.
She would have a rebuttal sheet because I used to do telemarketing. And she was,
oh, that's right.
Okay, what is your reason for suicide? What about your loved ones? Okay, and we've covered that. And don't you think that you are a good person? Okay, we've covered that.
Have you thought about the afterlife? It is a possibility. But
you have to ask your wife. Reach down and dig deep. Are those your wife's balls or your balls? Make a decision right now. Coffee is for closers.
Coffee's for closers.
Come on. Some Glengarry Glenn Ross references here.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yep.
What's the closest you ever got to suicide?
I was a teenager, 17, 18, and my dad said my dad was the nicest guy in the world, but he's like, he had to put his foot down because my stepmother was like, cause I did run roughshod over the house. So I lived a block up with my friend Keith Kingsbury in a car and where it was
when
the
you were
winter.
16?
17 or 18. Wow. I don't know if it was when I just moved away and moved back or right before I moved away. And we lived in his old Chevy Malibu in the winter, and we'd wake up. It's when you live in a car and you have a roommate. But I remember.
So passenger, roommate, who's to say?
The exhaust would fill up the car when he turned it on in the middle of the night in Massachusetts to stay warm, just warm it up for a minute. And then he would fall back asleep, and I'd go, yeah, I could die of carbon monoxide poisoning. And I just didn't care. I just would rather be warm and die.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still wearing those same long johns I've been wearing since January 25th. Now it's March 17th. Oh, 18th. Sorry, I missed your show last night.
Yeah. Fuck. It was a fun show, but it was not. There was nobody Irish on it, unfortunately. I've done a St. Patrick's Day show every year for like, I think it was the 17th year we've done it.
Wow.
And usually we get Irish comedians, but none of them were around this year, so I got a bunch of Jews.
Yeah, Morgan Murphy, she's out in New York City.
She's in New York. She's working on a job, right?
That was the title of her special, is Irish Goodbye.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what an Irish goodbye is, right?
Yeah.
I don't.
You don't say goodbye.
You go, I'll be right back.
Oh,
like, I quit of a lot of jobs. Yeah. I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
And you don't.
And showing up Irish means showing up without a bottle of wine or dessert or anything.
I didn't know that one.
Showing up Irish.
All right. So I show up a week before filming, going, then I'll rehearse with people. And I say, so who's playing my, the role is my ex-girlfriend, long lost love that I treated like shit from 25 years ago. I go, who's playing? Karen was the name. We had to change it for obvious reasons. Karen has a different. And who's playing Karen? They go, well, we haven't cast it yet, or whoever fell out. Do you have any ideas? And I said, well, I have my ex-girlfriend from 25 years ago that I treated like shit. And they go, really? Is she an actress? As a matter of fact, she is. And then they looked her up online and went, yeah.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, my ex-girlfriend, then the kid that's playing my kid that I abandoned, that comes to find me to play, he's 21 and he wants to be a stand-up comedian because his dad is, well, he's an actual 21-year-old fledgling comedian whose dad is not only a legendary Chicago comic, his name's on the wall up here. I called him yesterday.
He's like, wow. In the store.
T.P. Mulrooney, look for my dad's name there and send me a picture.
That's great.
So, like, all right. And then after Michael Biehn was going to play your character, and then he fell out, and then Bobcat Goldthwait was going to play your character, and he got COVID, and then Fitzsimmons is playing in the script a comic I used to work with 17 years ago. And then when you got the part, you did the part, I did the math. Yes, it's 17 years ago.
Yeah.
We worked together.
Yeah.
A man show.
Yeah.
And like, there's.
That's amazing. So that must have put you in a real comfort zone in terms of, like, you know, being in your character.
No, it made me fucking paranoid that my character's dying of liver failure.
It's too real.
Like everything's real in this. And I'm a guy who's dying of liver failure that won't go to a doctor. And I'm not going to go to a doctor to see if this fucking movie plays out.
Wait, so tell me, did he treat you badly when you guys dated? Like what?
Mostly.
Like in what way? He just was a drunk or he ignored you? Or
it was more infidelity and...
Distance, and jealousy.
I was. You mean emotional distance?
There was the emotional
distance. Wouldn't talk to me, but not in a mean way. Just like a very general cold shoulder. If I asked him anything remotely important,
together?
We were late 20s. I was early 30 probably when we broke up. We were together 3 years.
Living in L.A.?
Yeah. I had just... I moved to L.A. in 95, and then we were together till, you know, for...
98 or 99.
96 to 99, I think it was.
Yep.
And, but I was like... she was a star. Like, she would take me to all these places I could never get in that you probably shouldn't have gotten in either. Like... because she was a star in the late 80s, early 90s, and you would fucking abuse that privilege so beautifully.
Oh, yeah.
She got me into everything.
I was helping people.
She got me into all these Oscar after parties. She knew how to get onto first class.
Gift like, bags.
Yeah. Like, even swag, she wasn't on the list.
It was before everyone knew about swag.
Yeah.
This was pre-social media. So you were still in your own little bubble.
Yeah.
Of... you know, now everyone's living a swag kind of life, right? So, but when you were doing really well in Hollywood, certainly before and then in the 80s and 90s, it was a bit of a swag life.
Right.
And
you
didn't know any different.
Yeah.
So.
Did that change you? Do you feel like that had a bad effect on you? Or you took it in stride?
No, none of that's, I mean, I don't
but
know.
I was the guy. I was the plus one.
Yeah.
Where Richard Jenny specifically, I know this story because I remember when he died. I get the phone call from Attila. I was on stage in Michigan, and I when my phone rings, I forget to turn it off before I see who it is.
Yeah.
And it's Attila. He's like, did you hear? Richard Jetty killed himself.
Did you take the call on,
yeah,
on stage?
On stage.
I do that.
Yeah,
calls. I
love that.
I always do that.
Yeah. but Richard Jetty would like, they did a show called Platypus Man.
Oh, of course. On the UPN.
Yeah,
or,
they co-starred in that.
UPN.
Yeah. And so he'd come to the improv. You know how he hit on every fucking woman.
Everybody.
So she'd say, Richard, this is my boyfriend, Doug. And he'd go, nice to meet you. Anyway, what are you doing later?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, just dismiss me. Everyone would do that. Like, I was always the plus one. And I kind of resented her because at that time, I came to L.A. and I had a development deal. I had lived out of my car, and all of a sudden, I have a development deal and an agent and a manager. And I'm up and coming.
Yeah.
And like, I should get some of this attention. So as a cunt, I was an awful, awful person to her. I resented her. Plus, she didn't really, she didn't drink or smoke. And that's what I do.
So what attracted you to Doug? Because it doesn't seem like you guys on paper would have been a match.
I bet I'll know who set us up. But when you say it, it was a blind date.
Yes, we were fixed up.
A guy that always, in the 90s, the improv bar. There's a bunch a row of drunkards that sat there. Steve Segrin was always
there. Anthony Clark.
Anthony Clark, for sure.
Yeah. And Swartzen.
Swartzen was coming a little bit later.
Yeah.
But Ron Zimmerman.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So Ron Zimmerman says to me, hey, listen, I want to set you up with this girl. She's one of People Magazine's 50 hottest.
Did you get one of those?
She was on this show, which I never saw ahead of the class, but I was still a star fucker to this day. I loved name dropping. And
mildly abusive, I think, is what we started with. Go ahead.
He goes, but in return, you had to set me up with one of your friends, meaning back in the day, the Ginger and Marianne of the improv were Sarah Silverman and Bonnie McFarlane.
Right.
And then Nancy Pimentel was your default. But I'm so I like, okay. So that was the blind date we got set up on. And then we were together for three years.
But what would, and no offense to you, Doug, what would attract you to him? Because if he's drinking and smoking and you're not into that lifestyle.
He's incredibly intelligent. He's the smartest man.
Yeah, okay.
I knew.
Yeah.
No. And
Doesn't usually get you far in Hollywood.
Funny.
First of all.
Incredibly funny.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And
but you didn't know me. You met me. I was slouched over the Coach and Horses bar when. Like, where do you want to go? And I go, well, this is where I hang out. And she's like, all right, I'll show up. I don't really drink or smoke. So I'm just sitting there drinking and smoking over many cocktails of my own and none of yours. And then you agreed to a second date. Chuck Woolery was relevant at the time.
And you're wearing his outfit right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what attracted you to a second date, because I couldn't have been hilarious and intelligent that night.
Yeah.
I think I don't know when I saw you on stage, but I don't know if I saw you before and then we went out or... But I knew you were smart and funny.
Thank God we do stand-up. We never would have gotten women like this. I mean, my wife saw me do stand-up, and there's no fucking way she would have been with me if she didn't see me crushed like the first time we went out.
Everyone's memory over the years, I don't remember her seeing me much doing stand-up. Uh-huh. She was mostly going to premiere parties.
Yeah.
And I wasn't that funny in 1996.
Yeah, I feel it.
No, she
thick,
says I was
thick with resentment.
Funny and smart. And I wasn't really smart because it would have reflected in my comedy. If you find my comedy from 1996, not so smart or funny. I think she has, like, you know how they like bad boys? I was like a sad boy. I was like a fetal Bukowski or something.
Were you going to fix him? Was there some of that?
I did have confidence, though.
Yeah.
which misplaced confidence is the most offensive thing
and
to
he's
me.
He's handsome. He's a good-looking guy. I mean, I think you're not giving him due credit for looks, especially in the 90s.
I'm scribbling the hair back on his head as I'm looking at him right now. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
No, I was never good looking.
Well, you weren't hard on the eyes.
You know how women are. They find beauty where we can't.
Yeah, right.
We find hatred in what they love.
What did you learn from dating Doug in terms of what you brought to your next relationships?
Oh, wow. Yikes. I'm not sure I brought any to the next relationship, but I know that I wanted to simplify.
Yeah.
That Doug's life... And our life together began to get very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exhausting. So I definitely wanted something more straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, anything I say about this won't be funny. So I think I should shift gears.
No, that's fine.
You say funny for your act. If you find something that is about to be brilliant, you go, oh, write it down and use it on stage. Yeah. Don't waste it on a podcast. I remember.
I learned a lot about stand-up, but I didn't bring that to my next relationship. Mm. But, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Please hold.
But we were funny together also. Mm-hmm. I always felt that Doug made me more funny.
Yeah.
And he was writing a sitcom. I didn't write with him or anything, but we had comedy together.
This will engage.
You had some Mary Tyler Moore writer writing for you, right?
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stan Daniels.
That's a big name, right? Wasn't he a big name writer?
From Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
And I would go over and co-write. Like, I had no idea. I really lived out of a piece of shit car for 3 years and then moved to L.A. I was just doing fucking triple gig dick joke fucking Montana. And then I moved to L.A. with a development deal where, oh, you're going to try to write a sitcom. And we paired you with a guy that has Emmy Awards from Cheers as a second string guy and Mary Tyler Moore from 1973.
And maybe the top three greatest sitcoms in history.
Yeah, but at this point, he's like fucking nose hairs are tingling in the wind. And he's got all his Emmys up there.
Yeah.
And I, of course, wrote her into the script and my mother into the script because my mother had just moved out to L.A. to be an actress. And it was a whole fiasco. We could do this. And he'd write, okay, and now your character, he gets a cut on his finger, so your mother goes in to get Mercurochrome. I'm like, Mercurochrome? My dad was like 30 years older than my mother, and that's the last time I heard the reference of Mercurochrome, but I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
He's got all these Emmys staring down at
me. He's building the set, and there's like two twin beds next to each other in your bedroom. So did you shoot a pilot?
No, it went fucking nowhere.
Nowhere. Yeah, those deals were nice, though. Those 90s deals, they were a lot of money, and they were so poorly thought out. The people, they paired me with this. I had a sitcom, and I'm all Irish, and so my sitcom was, my first deal was very Irish sensibility. It was caustic. It was sarcastic. There was some loyalty. There was all the tropes that you'd see with Irish people. And then they give me this guy who's a Jewish writer from Seinfeld. And he was fucking terrible. He was terrible.
Oh, if you can remember his name, that might be one of the ones.
It was Andy something. I don't remember his last name.
Anyway.
And so he had this script software. Because usually you use Final Draft. That's the standard software for writing scripts. He had this other software. Because that way I couldn't get in there and make any changes. So he was this control freak who controlled the script and he put in jokes that made my fucking skin crawl. And when they handed it in, I made them take my name off the script and I offered to give the money back. They let me keep, my agent was like, no, we're not doing that. And they let me keep the money, but it was clearly not going anywhere.
One of the great things about Ron Zimmerman, I mean, there's much more great things about him, but he still writes on a yellow legal pad.
Does he?
When he writes his scripts. Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do
good
you?
Old yellow pad.
Right.
many yellow legal pads.
Hmm. But one thing I carried from Doug forever was I always felt like he met everyone where they were. Like, he's an incredibly compassionate, loving person, mm-hmm. which you might not see if you weren't, you know, in a very close relationship with him. But it was, he was like shockingly understanding and loving of whoever it was, wherever they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I came from, I'm from a very strict Roman Catholic / Greek Orthodox family. And there's not a lot of acceptance when things fall outside the lines.
Right, right.
And so that was the big revelation.
I could see
revelation.
That being very appealing.
Yeah, it
yeah.
was a big revelation for me with Doug.
Yeah.
Was how to just love somebody.
Right.
Just exactly for who they were.
I
they
was,
were.
At the other hand, experiencing, oh, now I think I'm someone because I have a development deal, which I don't know at the time means nothing.
Yeah.
But when you're were living out of your car for 3 years, you think, oh, I have $14,000 means I'm the richest man. I'm fucking Elon Musk. And everyone like gives me courtesy at the improv. I can go do a set whenever I want because my managers half own Joanne Astro and Mark Lano are my managers. Right. So
half own the improv.
Yeah. So I went up at the improv and then you go back then. Oh, that means I can fuck a lot of women.
Yeah.
So I would. So I was.
But I mostly didn't know about it. I just had suspicions. I didn't get.
Well, because you were never fucking premiere parties.
I got most of it confirmed.
You were trying to get work when I was trying to get fucking laid.
Right. You were coming home with leather bags with Chanel number 9 and massage certificates in it.
I was coming home smelling of those same scents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever catch him red-handed?
No. It was after we broke up. That a friend went to see him on stage, you know, went to see one of his shows. And he did this whole bit about all of these waitresses that he had sex with while, and I showed up, like I showed up bright eyed. Yeah.
I know one of them.
There you go.
I know one.
And she just assumed that I knew.
Is her name associated with a drug?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Yeah. Or I used to have that in my notebook because I, K, so always just put K for your name, K, and then four circled. Because I had a fivesome with four comedy club waitress /
No.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I didn't know it was five. I thought it was a three-way.
I was the fifth.
But
it was a four-way.
Women and you?
Yeah.
That's insane!
And I was so drunk, I couldn't get it up at all.
But
I was squeezing enough blood into it so I could technically say they didn't probably want me there. They would have done a foursome just fine, but I was there. So I just wanted to make sure, and with covering one eye, I could make sure I get every one of them technically penetrated so I could say I just had a fivesome. And yeah, that.
And I was all very innocent. Showing up, wondering where he was when I got to the hotel.
Yeah. Well,
those were the days.
Point is,
it's not like he was really fucking other women. He was just trying to fuck other women.
It's a technicality.
It was my sheer innocence, and I just never expected it. So I didn't suspect it. It was only...
I've had a fivesome, and I'm a movie star. I'm a... like, I have all these... Technically, yes, I did do a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was not like, oh, we're so into stand-up. Right. We're just all fucked up, and they're all half lesbians, and they were going to do this, and they're drunk, and I'm drunk, and they all probably hated themselves afterwards, because after we broke up, I put it on my website. I didn't use their names.
You didn't, all right.
Yeah. But I think I put it in the book. I put it in one book.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And how old were you when this was happening?
26.
Oh, you were a baby.
Yeah, 26.
Had you been with many lovers before that?
A year and a half apart.
No, strict Roman Catholic, Greek Orthodox.
So he was like the second or third guy you'd ever been with?
It's a very small number, let's just say.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I didn't realize that I was actually sleeping with all of these women.
Yeah.
Via Mr. Stanhope.
At the height of AIDS.
Oh my God, that was the catchphrase back then was... When you sleep with someone, you're sleeping with everyone they've ever slept with.
Yeah.
One time, I fucked a girl from a cover band in Idaho in my early days when that was out in a triple gig. And I go, you know how they say afterwards, I said, you know how they say you just, when you sleep with someone, you've slept with everyone they slept with. You just fucked some of the ugliest, fattest women that you've ever seen in your life. We keep in touch.
Well, it's a kind of a beautiful story, and it's a shame the film didn't get more into like the backstory of your guys' love.
But when you came into that film, not only was it, you know, specific to the script, 17 years, then you came in and did not only. Like, oh, all the stand-up parts they told us, that's just like a bookmark. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. But they wanted you to do a specific thing that and we both went, but you did it and you pulled it off.
The thing on stage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's too dead. Like, people wouldn't even remember, but you did that so well. And the rest of our scenes are mostly, you had the hardest job because... You had all the dialogue. Most of it is me going, yeah, I remember. Or maybe I don't.
Yeah.
And then but the scene, and comics are listening mostly. The scene is us sitting in a comedy condo with you just, remember the time in fucking Fort Fuck, Ass Knuckle, Nebraska.
Yeah.
And then there was all these chicks and the thing and the guy. And when we would cut from filming us, we would go back into our own road stories.
Right.
Or Mancho stories.
Right.
Where, like, why did we yell cut?
Yeah.
Because it was the exact same dialogue.
Yeah.
Kind of the same way. We acted like we were in love again. But we weren't really.
But you weren't drinking during filming.
He wasn't. He said he had an entire extra 8 hours in the day. Because he wasn't, because he was sober performing.
I respect that. I mean, that's the thing is, you turn in, the director was driving me, not the director, but the producer was driving Tony. Me to and from set, Tony.
Okay.
The one that wasn't as sad.
He was fucking blown away by your performance. He was blown away by your commitment and your, you know, everything about you was very professional about how you, and it's so funny because you have this moniker of like this, you know, crazy wild man who's a drunk and, you know, might be gay. But on the movie, like, you're a pro. You're a pro.
Total pro.
Yeah.
My call time would be an hour or more ahead of his.
Because of makeup. Yeah. She has all that hair.
Yeah. The hair isn't the thing. Yeah. And the wardrobe.
I shaved my head. I lost all my hair for the performance so I wouldn't clog up all the makeup time because she has all that hair.
Oh, that was generous.
Wasn't that nice of him?
Sure.
But he would show up early to set. He would show up at the earliest call time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Doug, no, you're supposed to sleep.
Yeah.
To the very last minute.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I'm just going to get there. I'll go over my lines. I'll get comfortable. He would show up in wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
He's still wearing
wardrobe.
Yeah, not only Long that, Johns,
he should have been sleeping late because he was at that Outback Steakhouse bar until wee hours every night. We stayed in this hotel. It's the fucking shittiest hotel.
I was there at the same place.
Terrible. And
basically the airport hotel.
It was the airport hotel.
But it was close to location. So there you go.
Didn't it have hardwood floors or it was like,
no,
it felt cold. And so we go. So Doug goes, all right, we'll go to the Outback tonight. And I was thinking, all right, this will be fun. This is a treat. Doug's probably hasn't been there. We walk in and was like, this fucking, all of a sudden a drink is put in front of him. It's his regular drink. There's a flight attendant who's like,
yes.
Hey, Doug. He's like, hey, sweetie, how did that work out?
I'm sorry. That's Tim is the bartender. Daphne is the fucking flight attendant.
Yeah. And now what was the story with the flight? I know something funny happened with that flight attendant.
Well, you have to go to the Doug Stanhope version of this podcast. And it's that episode is scenes from an Outback Steakhouse.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, where's Hennigan? Get me that vodka out of my bag.
The food was not bad at the Outback.
No. Yeah.
I was shocked.
You can't tweet 5 weeks where I'm stuck at a fucking hotel where the only thing in the hotel is the Outback Steakhouse. I'm like, I'm so tired of filet mignon. You can't complain on Twitter. It's one of those things. Yeah. I think it was a Chris Rock line. Is when you're a celebrity, the only people you can complain to is other celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking love Chris Rock.
Yeah. He's been banging around here. He's been doing sets. Him and Kevin Hart, they go up on stage together.
It's a water bottle in my bag that looks like water. It's not.
And Kevin Hart is like, you know, the guy's got oozes charisma. I mean, he walks on stage, the place goes fucking bananas, and he's a great storyteller, and he kills. And then Chris Rock comes up and makes Kevin Hart look like an open micer.
You're kidding.
Like, just takes it two levels up instantly. Sees it, and he never writes anything down. Like, Chris will just walk on stage, he'll do a fucking great rant, and then he'll just stop and go, what else did I want to talk about? And he'll let all the energy collapse.
Wow.
And then he'll start all over again with a new idea. Like, you know, he's not fundamentally a good comedian. Like, in terms of, like, you know, never do this, never do that. He doesn't follow the rules, but he is one of the greatest comics of all time, but by doing it completely his own way.
I have a 25-minute bit, Hennigan, about it culminates with the King of Thailand, it's never been filmed, and it was about a tour in Southeast Asia, like Singapore and Vietnam and all that I did, and it culminates with that. But there's the reason I want to film it as a standalone bit, because it's like 23 minutes long, is there's one bit about where I emailed Chris Rock, where I don't know him, but I had his email address, and I'll just leave it at that. Maybe that will fucking make people tweet me, fucking film the King of Thailand thing.
Yeah.
Because it was a fucking, like, I would open with 22 minutes of this whole story, but the part where I emailed Chris Rock, not knowing him, and he responded, is like the best part of that. When you have drunken self-confidence and then you wake up in the morning going, oh my God, I can't believe I believed in myself last night.
Yeah, right.
And it paid off.
Yeah, I thought I was a peer of Chris Rock around 3:20 a.m.
Yeah. And he, because I hated being compared to Bill Hicks and stuff. I always thought if there's anyone I should be compared to, it was Chris Rock, because we both have irritating voices. But like the angles I see myself going in were Chris Rock kind of angles, and not, we already had this discussion somewhere, probably not on this podcast, but I don't like the Bill Hicks. Like, no, I am personal. There's nothing about Bill Hicks that was ever about his life or his personal experiences.
That's true.
He also died at 32, so what are you going to say?
Was he 32? No.
Yeah, we broke up before Bill Hicks' age. So
he was not 32.
Yeah, 32, 1994, February something.
No shit. Yeah. Dude, he looked 50.
Well,
he lived hard.
You ever see, what's it, Bert, the guy that played Rocky's coach?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Bert was his name in the movie, right?
No, it's Mickey was his name in the movie.
Yeah. Right? Copy Mick.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's his
whatever.
Name?
Did you ever then you see him 30 years earlier on the Twilight Zone. He looks the exact same age. Everyone from those days always looked old, and now everyone looks fit and fine.
Well, do you know the Traveling Wilburys, one of the greatest super bands of all time?
Love them.
Yes.
George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Tom Petty.
Roy Orbison.
And the guy from ELO.
Jeff Lynne.
And those guys, and you think of that band as like, this was a victory lap. This was a, you know, this was a coda. This was the end of their career. They were like in their 30s. They were all.
No, that's not true.
You're fucking.
No, you're the guy over there that can fact check that for you.
Are you fact check how old the Traveling Wilburys were?
I was in my fucking 50s.
No, they were in their 40s. I bet you they were in the 40s.
You're being moved, though.
Yeah, yeah, I'm being moved.
You're a gambling man?
I am.
Uh-huh.
I don't like cash.
We've got someone.
Oh, by the way, Hennigan, remind me to get cash. I have to pay a lot of people. Please hold. I want to drop the name of Morgan Anderson.
Yes.
Who we pulled out of fucking Roast Battle to open for Annie Letterman is the other name I need to drop. Fucking Bert Kreischer is the name I have to shit on. Hey, Bert Kreischer, do you want to fucking open for me as a goof? I'm in Durham. What days? It's Tuesday, Wednesday. Never heard a word back. Annie Letterman?
Killed
Fuck
it.
Yeah, I'd love to. We had a blast. Fuck you, Kreischer. You and your big, fat fucking other problems. And you can't even get back to me with a no.
He didn't even reply to you.
Well, he's busy.
Yeah.
I don't get back to people. Yeah, I can't shit on people. I never get back to people. If you're at the bar, we'll talk. We'll settle deals.
It is. That is a very sticky thing, not getting back to people. And how hurt some people get. Like, I had a good friend who's not friends with me now because I didn't always reply to his texts. And it's just like, I have fucking depression and I go dark. And it happens just randomly. It's not like, hey, this thing happened and then I got really sad. It's like, I woke up one day and I was unable to function for 48
specify,
hours.
Specify, please.
What's
like,
that?
What kind of depression? Because I get this, like, if someone's not going out of their way to tell me they like me, I think everyone hates me.
Yeah.
Including Christine Hodge, my ex. So when you think, like, I get back to someone based on, like, maybe a blue check mark or something. But if someone doesn't get back to me, I like, oh, fuck. I'm done. My career is over. What kind of depression do you get?
My depression has been much more, it's in my family. And everybody just recedes, goes away, can't communicate.
They're like gums.
We recede like gums and hairlines. And I just, I can't snap out of it. And I can't think that, like, I see somebody jogging and I almost drop to my knees thinking, how did they do that?
Why don't I do that?
Or even somebody walking their dog and I'm like, look at how they can just take their dog with that leash and make it walk. Like, how do they do that? Like, I think the simplest things are insurmountable for me and it can go on for a couple days. So imagine I get a text from, you know, you say how many texts you get in a day and, you know, I don't reply to them all. Every one of those is like, I have so many failed relationships in my life from just dropping out on people. And it's not because I don't care. And I resent that there's people who are the Patton Oswalds of the world and the Pete Holmes of the world who are just always like present, energy, smart, charming.
Are they?
I'll leave now. No, I'm teasing.
Maybe you say the same thing at the same time.
Well, maybe I shouldn't even say those names out loud, but those are the people that I was going.
No, but they seem like they are, and you go, well, I hope someone's as fucked up as me.
Yeah.
I hope someone, and most of my problems are probably not alcohol-driven. I'm a pretty good drunk.
Yeah.
It's the mornings when I'm sober where I can't, I don't know what to say to you. Where you're talking about how do you walk a dog. I'm like, why can't I dance? Fucking Fat Mike, I did his No FX, I did his podcast. He goes, I wrote this song, I thought you could sing it for me. I go, the only time I get a comment about my singing is at home with my closest friends will stop singing the song that we're listening to because you suck so bad. And I'm like, I always focus on the things I can't do.
Yeah.
But
I think the second half of your life, you really do need to go like, okay, I tried. I felt like even as a stand-up, I think about like the things I tried to do. I tried to bring a guitar on stage once. I used to do impressions. Then I realized after doing it three times, okay, I don't do that. And it's got to be the same thing in life where you go like, I don't sing. I don't hike. Like, cross things off and stop beating yourself up about it.
I will never be able to scan a QR code. Oh, wait, no, this is Olivia Grace. I said, Olivia Grace is out there. I was telling her, or was it you?
We were
I don't know. How? Yeah, all the things that I'm never going to know how to do. I'm never going to fucking figure out how to stream Zulu Plus or scan a QR code, and I'm fine. I want to accept my level as an adult that's never going to learn.
Yep.
I'm not
like
gonna...
Don Gavin. Doesn't have a computer. Still reads novels. He reads like 5 novels a week. That's what he does instead of being online. God bless Don Gavin.
God bless Don Gavin.
You know?
Makes me want to write a novel.
Yeah.
Chris Berman doesn't have a cell phone or email.
Really?
Yeah, that's years ago. Maybe he does now. But it was at a time where he's like, yep, I don't care.
Right.
And I got to that level with shit I'm not going to learn.
Mm.
And I'm going to be good at what I do at this
exactly.
level as best I can.
Maximize the things you do well.
But I would say that, Doug, you have streamlined your life in many ways, so it's mostly focused on what you do well.
Mm.
That's why you call it functional alcoholism, because I'm good in my narrow alleyway, and I make the best I can.
That's why it's hard to have kids, because kids kind of expect you to be well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go like, no, I'm not, I don't do mornings. I'm
not interested.
It's one of the reasons I kind of fell back in love when we had to pretend we were in love on the set is because she never had kids either.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we're sitting around the fun house in Bisbee, drunk on a Tuesday, and all my friends, we go, oh, hey, remember why we're drunk on a Tuesday in our 50s? We don't have kids. Fuck them. And we toast to, in the ghost of you that now has kids.
Now I don't. Now I can start drinking because my kids are gone. They're off at college.
Oh, you aborted them late?
Yeah. It's the 78th trimester.
Nice.
So let's talk more about your trip to L.A. because I know you don't like L.A. and you're here. And you're playing at the Comedy Store.
I love being here because we stay at the hotel next door to the Comedy Store. I come here and it's like the fun house you've been to.
Yeah.
You will be eventually.
Yeah.
It's like I can leave my hotel, go see 1,000 comics I used to know, and then shake hands and go back. Everything else outside of this sucks.
Yeah.
Getting to the airport, getting to other podcasts, going to Sherman Oaks, everything sucks except being here with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember the last time I saw you here was election night of 2020. When was Trump elected? 2016?
It's called, hang on. This is why Brian Hennigan is going to get fired if this is not out in 2 months, is the hard copy of No Encore for the Donkey is about that entire year that culminates with the End of the World podcast.
Oh, no kidding.
The entire year was dominoes falling from the stage one in January till Bingo came out of her coma at Christmas. And it's
happened. I forgot about
it's,
that.
But it's the only book I wrote where I was a good writer.
Uh-huh.
Like the other two, it was good podcasts, Audible versions. This one you need to fucking read.
We're gonna send this to Don Gavin.
Yes.
Yeah. See what he thinks about it. So I forgot about that. She was in the coma during.
I was out of my fucking mind. I was crying in the green room.
Fuck.
Like, I'd go out and I'd try to be stoic. Fucking Bill Burr carried that whole thing so much.
He did.
And Rogan. And then people
Bert
showed
Kreischer,
up.
And I sat out there for a little bit. And I remember I said something. And I was like, I was feeling overwhelmed because, like, moment that they announced that pot had been legalized in California, the entire crowd lit a joint. And it was a fucking hot box. Wow. And somebody handed me a joint, and I'm not a big pot smoker, but I took a big hit. And And then I was high and I'm on a panel with a bunch of fucking murderers who are all just like, bam, bam, like fucking the crowd is jammed and it's Rogan and it's this kinetic energy. And I said something, a high joke that didn't land. And you fucking leveled me. I forget what you said, but it was like a quick level. And I just went like, oh, I don't have my brain with me right now.
I have no idea. Like I was. This is when I didn't know if Bingo was going to live or die, so I fled. I go, her parents and friends and family are with her, so I'm just going to leave because I can't help in the emergency room.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make them weird because it was her 40th birthday party. So all of her friends and family from all over the country came in, and then she fucking had a seizure and smashed her skull, so she's in a coma. And I'm like, they're all at the hospital. I'm going to go do this End of the World podcast.
Yeah.
And, but that was the culmination of a year of fucked up things. And Johnny Depp's wife is suing me.
Yeah.
By the way, get on the mailing list if you want to be in Fairfax, Virginia for a weird show on April 11th. Only mailing list people will get notified. It's a 90-seater. So it started with. Like we broke up on an Impractical Jokers podcast cruise in January because she caught me fucking a stripper, and then it goes I keep telling Hennigan he's fired if he doesn't. We've had a year that we can put this out. We had Audible exclusive. It's yeah. on Audible, but no, this is one you have to read because I fucking wrote it well.
Yeah,
he doesn't understand. He's really gonna get fucking fired if he doesn't get this out. And a hard copy.
Jesus, I can't wait to read it. Jesus. But yes, that's the last time I saw you. It was on that stage. And then they announced that the numbers were starting to look where it looked like Trump couldn't lose. And now I'm high. And everyone's being funny. Like, the level, it didn't affect the comedians.
You mean could win?
They could win. It looked like he was going to win. They absolutely was going to win. And I saw what that meant. And I don't know if the other comedians weren't processing it or they were just like such professionals that they were like, we're going to make this funny no matter what. And I just got up and I walked off stage and I walked to my car and I just fucking, I sat in my car in the parking lot and I listened to the news. And I think I got home at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't even drive home. Oh, that was a rough night.
I remember again, my walking girlfriend out wasn't at the end
in a coma.
Going, who fucking cares? Who wins? It doesn't matter. I'm so fucked. You know what? I'm not going to kill the fucking book.
Don't kill the book. Yeah.
Fucking Manson showed up with coke like John Goodman did that. In Flight. If you've never seen that movie, Flight, it was...
Denzel Washington.
It was exactly like that.
I remember him in the green room. I didn't know he had coke.
No, I'm not going to kill it. I'm going to wait for Brian Hennigan to get fucking no encore for the donkey out.
So you got some road dates coming up. I want to mention those.
Sony Music Hall. The only other one you have to remember is April 11th. What's going to happen there? 2 blocks away from the Fairfax County Courthouse on April 11th. Do I have to hint anymore?
Wow. Yeah,
but you're only going to be able to find out where I'm playing. It's a 90-seater if you're in the D.C. area.
Also, if you're in the Comedy Key West area,
I think we're calling it Doug Stanhope, a night of comedy, libel, and what do we say? What's the other word?
He left.
He was fired.
I think he thinks he's fired.
He's done.
He doesn't care. I've fired him a million times for not having this book out. Libel, and what do you get sued for by Amber Heard? Oh, dear.
Slander
and libel. There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. April 11th at Fairfax.
You County can't cancel Court. Doug Stanhope. That should be your next album.
No, that's where Johnny Depp's. He's suing her, and it's. I don't know why it's in Fairfax, Virginia, but I booked a fucking 90-seater on my way from New York to Key West. Yeah, let's go. Let's go book the first night of the trial of Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. I'm going to book a fucking gig.
That's nice.
Irish pub.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the downstairs of some Irish pub two blocks away.
Uh-huh.
Yes, an evening of comedy, libel, and slander. She fucking sued me.
I just thought that to was all settled. Isn't that all settled?
Mine was. Oh, yours she sued is. Me to shut up.
Yeah.
So my attorney says I can't talk about it on Stern and whatever. Well, I'm still not going to talk about it, but I'm going to rope a bunch of fucking TMZ fucking narcs into paying $50 to come see me, seeing it, and I'll never talk about it.
Before that, he's in New York, I think April 7th. Those are the New York dates.
Oh, yeah. We're going to sell those
Tony
tickets.
Tony Hall in New York.
That's I'll be it. Doing the same act both places, but yeah.
And then in the fall, September 11th, starting in Dublin and then going all through the UK.
Oh, wait. Hang on. This is important because I can't do this myself, but if you're just a random fan, I think it's hashtag... Johnny Depp, God damn it. They have all these Depp people. They're fucking sorry, but you are weird, but they're, justice for Johnny. Okay. Hashtag justice for Johnny.
Uh-huh.
I can't do it, but you can do it. Hashtag justice for Johnny.
Get some justice for Johnny. It's a fucking travesty what's happening, but.
No, just fucking, I just want all the Depp heads to fucking come to the show and fuck off with all the TMZ narcs. Can you get me out of here?
What is this? Do you need to talk about this?
What's this?
No, I tried to write that down, but that guy over there.
I feel like these are crib notes for.
No, he gave me the fucking, he saw me writing on my hand.
Oh, I see.
And now I get the note in my.
Okay.
All right. So, that'll do it. That's Swapcast. We've done I don't think I've ever done a Swapcast before, so this is kind of fun.
We're going to
I guess
you.
I should plug my, I'm going to plug
could
my dates.
Please? Could you please?
I'm going to be coming up, where am I coming? And when is this going to come out? A couple weeks?
No, you put it out whenever you want.
Oh, I thought you were putting it out also.
Yeah, but if you need to put it out.
They're going to expire. Yeah,
no, put it out as soon
as. I'm coming to Spokane.
Put it out right now.
La Jolla, San Diego, Denver.
Oh, I love it.
Tacoma.
Where in Denver?
The Comedy Works, baby.
Oh, I do the Oriental, but I love that fucking lady.
Wendy Curtis?
Yeah.
She's great.
Kreischer hooked us up. I thought she hated me. I think everyone hates me.
Yeah.
Fucking Joe Rogan. I thought he hated me. Maybe we even talked about it. He called me on the wave tonight. Hey, you want to do the thing?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I thought you hated me. I think everyone hates me.
Yeah.
I have a bad thing.
Well, I love you.
I know. Because Mikey loves me.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
Your character name in The Road Dog, the movie.
So The Road Dog, the movie, if you go to hashtag The Road Dog.
The hashtag,
they keep changing
the
title.
We're a year out. We don't have to worry about that.
We'll do this again before the film comes out. And thank you. So anything we could plug for you?
Oh,
every hole. Oh, God damn it. I said it.
her Polaroids will be out on Instagram, on Doug's
I'm in
account.
A film called The Nagal, The Sinner, The Sin Eater, and I get to be the Sin Eater. It's basically a horror movie, but it's really chilling. I'm not a horror movie person.
Yeah.
And wait, they did
you're
a
in a
premiere.
Movie? You didn't tell me?
They did premiere it here at...
I'm going to fucking give you a strong beating when I get you back to the fucking Hyde House.
Yeah. That's why we broke up.
Yeah.
But, it was at the Man's...
back together.
The Man's Chinese Theater. And I saw it, and I'm a vicious critic of anything that I'm in. But this was chilling. They did a great job. They did
very
a great
cool.
job. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Dan the Laz was our director, and he's stellar. And the crew was amazing. It was all incredible. And I got to do it right before the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly when it's coming out.
But okay.
It's in a film festival circuit. That's when people ask when The Road Dog, the movie's coming out, Doug replies.
Posthumously.
Hopefully not. All right. Thanks for listening.
Love you.
God bless America.
Take us out, Bingo.
Okay, bye-bye now.